Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast, formerly the Full Draw Full Time Podcast. Same great content, same two hosts, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows and Cody Kellum of Born and Raised Outdoors. I go down.
All right, welcome back, guys. I've got Cody Kellum with me and Wes Smith, who has followed me around the mountains a number of times with a camera. And we're going to talk about a number of things. But first of all, man, it's good to be back sitting in front of a microphone again, Cody.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, it's 4:18 here and on the Pacific side, and then what,
5:18? Yep.
Yeah. And I'm sitting in shorts and a t-shirt, and it sounds like you might be in something, you know, a down parka and some puffy pants.
I'm becoming well acquainted with a snow shovel on what is this, May 19th. We got almost 2 feet of snow in the last 28 to 30 hours. So I got a, you know, big welcoming committee in the form of a lot of white stuff really late in the season. This is by far the biggest snow that we've gotten of the year, probably by factor of three. And this is coming, you know, way tardy in the snow season, at least in my estimation.
Is that snowpack going to help in antler growth or hurt?
I would think it would probably help because the bucks aren't going to really be, you know, have moved up high yet anyway. So this will just add to that snowpack and kind of a late snow melt. It was interesting. I was talking with my hunting partner, Justin, whom you're well acquainted. Actually, both of you guys are well acquainted with. And he was kind of reminiscing and saying, hey, this is like the snowpack of 2011 where it was good snowpack in a late, late cold spring, which kind of delayed the melting. And so we kind of got a later green up and man, I'll tell you what, it was off the hook. We had, bucks, you know, that were hanging up in that basin west that we've stalked a number of times and there were a lot of bucks and a lot of good ones that were hanging out in there. So I'm rubbing my hands together right now. I've got high hopes for this coming year.
Sweet.
Yeah. No, awesome. It's going to be awesome. Hey, on a side note, Wes, I wanted to congratulate you. You got a kid coming up here. What, next month? Your first?
Yeah. So my first, coming up in less than a month.
It's wow.
19th now. Tonight we're recording this on the 19th and yep. She's expected June 17th. So we know we're having a little girl.
Harper. Congratulations.
Yep. Thank you very much. Yeah, I am super excited. You know, it's actually hit me pretty hard that it's actually happening last couple of weeks here because I'm going to a Lamaze class.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah.
Fun.
I'm like, yeah. I'm just glad I haven't gotten kicked out yet.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? No kidding.
Now, I've been entertained getting a text message here and there and some selfies in this class, and it's pretty humorous, Wes. I remember that myself not too long ago.
Yeah.
I imagine that they're probably having a hard time with your sense of humor, or maybe you're tempering it there in the class to be a little bit more socially acceptable, huh?
Well, it's just funny because, like, I mean, the lady that's doing it, she's real nice and stuff, but she's really old school, and so she's got these like big posters that are like laminated to show you diagrams of exactly how the female body's going to work. And so I just think it's kind of funny. And so I pull out my phone and I kind of discreetly, I'm trying to take a picture to put on my Instagram story. And I forget that my sound is on my phone.
Oh no.
And so I pull out my phone and then everyone in the class just hears. And she just pauses and looks at me. And I was like, yeah, sorry about that.
Just wanting to document the journey.
It's all for the Instagram story. It's okay.
This world of social media that did not exist when back when my kid was born. Wow. Yeah, it is a far different world nowadays. That is for sure.
True.
That is for sure. So before we dive in, Wes, I wanted to talk to you about your spring bear hunting adventure coming up, that you actually just got back from here last month. And then Cody, you've got a similar adventure that you're just about to embark on. So I'm sure that you'll be listening with an extra keen ear here as well. Maybe before, let's tease our listeners with that, but let's kind of dive in a little bit for those of you, the listeners that aren't acquainted with Wes. Well, let me get you to give us a little bit of background on you, Wes. And like I said, you've been on the podcast before. If people want to go back and listen, the Nevada From the Field podcast from 2015, and then Colorado from 2016, Live from the Field. Those are both series of episodes that you were on, and people get a good idea, kind of get a chance to know you and your personality that way. And then, of course, if you've been to the Full Draw Film Tour, the last couple of years, you've helped host that as well. But beyond that, why don't you kind of give our listeners a little bit of a background on you?
Yeah, okay. A little of my personal, life. I grew up in Brownsville, Oregon, large town of 1,500 people. Went to Central in high school. Played four sports in high school, went to college, played basketball in college at New Hope Christian College. I really did not start getting into videoing and stuff, or even think about videoing or photographing hunts or anything until about 2013. And I was, 19, 20-ish. And just started taking pictures on my phone, and one thing led to another. I knew just basically people in the industry that kind of just said, "Hey, you know, are you interested in filming and stuff?" And I said, "Yeah." So I kind of got my name out there, and then next thing I know, I'm part of the Full Draw Film Tour, running around with all those guys putting on shows and stuff. And then it's just been a whirlwind ever since, as far as my videography goes.
I got a quick story about the first time I met Wesley, and it was actually at a Full Draw Film Tour event. We are in, of all places, Flagstaff, Arizona, a long ways from Brownsville, Oregon. Yeah. He knew one of the guys on the crew, and so he was actually out in Alabama. Is that correct? You're out in Alabama building a house?
I was in Mississippi.
Mississippi, okay. He was out in Mississippi working, and instead of flying home, he flies to Flagstaff. And so I'm out in the alley unloading this trailer, and here comes a guy with his duffel bag full of skill saw and drills and everything else. He goes, I'm here to go to work. Is this the right place? And I'm like, what the heck? Wesley rocking his curly golden locks on the mullet at the time. And, so that was my first encounter with Wes Smith, and I've never stopped laughing since, I've been around the kid. So he was a great addition to the tour. We're running around the country and putting shows on. But yeah, that was my first encounter with Wes. It was awesome.
That sounds like typical Wes right there.
I had to walk like 2 miles to the nearest convenience store from some deodorant on that
trip. That's right. That? Yep.
Because on the plane from like Houston to Flagstaff, I was on this little 12-person plane, and it was, I kid you not, 100 degrees, and I was sweating so bad. And I got into the cab, headed to the Full Draw show, and the cab guy goes, "Dude, I gotta say something. You smell so bad." And I'm like, "Yeah, bro, I can smell myself. I am very aware. Thank you for that, though." And so I got to the... Oh, that was great.
So you stop off at the bathroom at the gas station, take a bum bath in the toilet there, huh?
Something like that, yeah.
All right. All right. Well, Wes has, like I had alluded to, Wes has followed me around the camera the past few years in both Nevada and Colorado, done a bang up job, you know, filming, and now is kind of embarked on the editing end of things. And together we're kind of working on this next film project. But that, you know, that I was planning on having out this year, but just got delayed. So it'll be one more season will be added to it. And then, you know, post season of 2017 or early 2018, we'll get another Mule Deer DVD released there. One quick bit of business here before we dive into the stories here. And I'd like to find out kind of Wes, about your, you know, your kind of journey into, you know, filming and kind of freelancing there. But I wanted to ask you, Cody, the film tour's kicked off now, and I know that you're not playing as major of a role in it as you have, you know, in the past there. But I wanted to kind of get a pulse on how that's going and, you know, your conversations with Jade and how that's rolling out.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's so if you guys didn't catch the last episode, we had Jade Helmick on, who is now the new owner of Full Draw Film Tour. And so, yeah, he's busy. They kicked off last week, in Spokane, Washington, did a few shows last weekend. And now he's in Western Oregon this weekend. And, he's got a whole bunch of dates coming up. So if you guys want to go check that out, go to fulldrawfilmtour.com, /dates tickets. And then that you can, see what's all, and hopefully catch a show there. But yeah, they have been all over the place, and they got a great films this year. There's quite a few that are pretty interesting, but one in particular that this guy from Hardworking Hunter put together that I can't wait to see. They're actually going to be here in town this weekend and here in Roseburg, and so we're going to go. We're actually kind of doing a born and raised beer garden there. So, Trent and Trevor and I and Steve might be pouring beers for people at the show. So that will be interesting.
Nice.
But, yeah, it'll be the first time without a mic in my hand. Kind of bittersweet for sure. But, they're doing well. You guys got to go check out the tour if you've never been. I've honestly, people that have gotten drugged to the show that were non-hunters are now diehards and all excited about bow hunting. So it's definitely an atmosphere that you can't just watch on your phone or see on your computer. Being there with a live crowd and the excitement around a bunch of other bow hunting junkies, it's pretty awesome. So
yeah, I'll definitely add to that with your comments there. I mean, it is an incredible atmosphere. I'm just counting the days. It's a month, 4 weeks now until they get here to Loveland and Denver. And I think I'm going to hit both of those shows. My wife's going to be out of town and I'm going to have my two little girls. So I think I'll take them to the Loveland show and then see if I can get a babysitter for the Denver one, so I don't have to subject them to the hour and a half, you know, each way trip down there to Denver. But I'm super excited to see it. And I hear they're kind of unofficially dubbing this one the deer show, because there's multiple mule deer videos in there where it's kind of mostly been elk hunts in the past. So I'm being a mule deer nut, I'm super excited for that.
Heck yeah. Well, and that, yeah, we've got the, so if you guys listened to the semi-live series podcast, back a while ago, that hunt with South and I, is in the film tour. So it's pretty stoked to see that. And I haven't got to see a full version of it yet. So Saturday is going to be the first time I get to check that out.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I got to see the whole thing in the final edit, and I'm pretty pumped about it. So I was watching it on my TV at home. So to see it on the big screen is going to add a whole new level to it. Is Zach kind of helping out with the tour again this year?
He sure is. Yep.
Yeah.
He's I know he's been, he didn't get a make last weekend and this weekend, but from here on out, I think he's going to be rocking and rolling. So,
wow, that's a major commitment on his end.
Yep.
And Wes, I imagine with your kid coming, you're probably kind of keeping a low profile there, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to help out when I can, but this summer is ridiculous for me. No, I mean, yeah, pretty ridiculous. I got all sorts of stuff. I got like two or three weddings to film, two or three weddings to be in. My brother is also getting married on top of that. My baby's being born, all this stuff. Just, yeah, pretty hectic. So
hey, let's segue with that into kind of how you got started into filming. And while we're talking about that, you know, you just mentioned filming weddings. And maybe I'll ask you, you know, just right out the gate. I mean, the opportunities to film, you know, from a hunting standpoint, of course, are, you know, somewhat limited typically to the fall seasons, that kind of August, September. And then if you're doing rifle stuff kind of into October, November, there's some archery opportunities, obviously. But from a Western standpoint, it's primarily August and September. And so, you know, if you allow your camera to sit on a shelf dormant for 10 months out of the year, that's going to kind of your camera skills are going to calcify somewhat. How, you know, obviously filming weddings gives you another revenue opportunity, but how has that helped kind of to either up your game or kind of keep your skills steadily improving?
Okay. So I started out, how I got into photography, videography stuff is literally I got Instagram and I saw pictures and I thought, man, this is pretty cool. And so I started taking pictures and then, I bought a GoPro and then I bought a little tiny Rebel Canon and I just started videoing just little stuff here and there. Whether I was turkey hunting or duck hunting or whatever. And I didn't really make much of it until, I started with the Full Draw Film Tour. And, then, so believe it or not, South, the reason why I actually started to film, like actually think about filming stuff was because, South Cox needed a videographer.
I'm sorry, Wes, man, that I drug you down this road.
Dude, I am. Don't be sorry. It's all good, man. I'm not complaining at all. But nice, no, all right. I mean, seriously, I had no experience at all. And I remember Cody and another guy and I went up to the Snake River on a bear hunt in the spring, and that was supposed to be my crash course, and it absolutely sucked. It just rained and was super foggy and was just like ridiculous. And I probably had my camera out for a grand total of 2 hours in 3 days, which was number one, a good learning curve for me because I needed to learn that I need to have my camera out a ton more. And I just did not get very much experience. So I was supposed to come and film you with another guy. And that kind of fell through at the last second. And Zach Henderson ended up coming. So, I mean, honestly, that first Nevada hunt, you know, it's kind of not super great for me to say, but that was a throw you into the lion's den and start
baptism filming. By fire, huh?
Yeah. You know, and I've that's actually how I like to do things, believe it or not. I like to fly by the seat of my pants sometimes. I mean,
I'm right there with you.
It turned out pretty good, I think. But yeah, so that I filmed that, and I filmed you and the guys for 9 or 10 days or whatever, and then I was like, sweet, you know, that was awesome. I liked what I was seeing on my camera screen. Sweet, you know, I got home and I didn't know how to edit. And so I was supposed to give all this footage to another guy and have him edit it up. And sent him all the footage, and I got a call back saying that all of my footage was shaky. I didn't get any audio. All of my footage was blown out, and that there was not a usable enough film in it. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And so then I thought to myself, well, I literally learned how to video on the side of a mountain, so I'll bet you I can learn how to edit myself. So I bought a computer and then got a computer, and I looked on YouTube, bought all the Adobe stuff to start editing, and I literally started learning how to edit right then.
Nice.
So
nice.
Yeah.
So that hunt was Nevada 2015 that you're referencing there.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And then you, from that hunt, we rolled right into Colorado 2015. So that was only, what, 10 days later?
Yeah, that was 10 days later. So I went back to back with you up there. And Colorado was awesome. I wish I could show everybody all the peaks and stuff. I'd have some really sweet stuff to show them south.
Yeah, yeah. We'd have a lot of company if that was the case, though. Yeah. It sucks having to use discretion in editing, man. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, but you know, as far as the, you know, what you're talking about for staying busy with videography, honestly, I just got off work one day and my little brother calls me and he goes, "Hey, so my girlfriend's brother is getting married. And he wants to know if you would video a wedding for him." And I'm like, I don't know. And then he goes, "Okay, well, he wants to talk to you. Here he is." And so I'm like, all right. So I'm on the phone with the guy and he goes, "Hey, I just watched your hunting video you did. That was really cool." And he goes, "Have you ever videoed a wedding?" And I said, "I've never videoed a wedding before. I've not done that." And he goes, "Okay, well, you think you could?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I think I could. I mean, I don't know what kind of product you're looking for here." I'm like, "I'm not exactly a wedding kind of guy." And he's like, "Well, okay, well, how much do you think you'd charge?" And I had never done it before. And I didn't want to, you know, say, "Oh yeah, five grand, you know, and have them with a product that they just did not like. And then, so I was like, "Well, I don't know. Let's see. Probably just like $800. I said, $800. And he goes, "Okay, sounds good." And I'm like, dang it. That was way too low. But actually, he ended up giving me $1,000 because he liked the video so well. And ever since then, it's just kind of been a snowball effect, and my prices have definitely gone up. So if you're listening to this podcast and think you're going to get me for $1,000, sorry to burst your bubble, but you're not. Man, I tell you, the video wedding, Cody's done it a time or two.
Yeah.
And it's, man, it can be
stressful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, stressful.
I mean, really, that's great practice for videoing a hunt, because it's not like, you know, in that moment you can take two. It's, you know, live action footage, and so great opportunity to kind of practice the real thing there, as far as from a, you know, preparing for a videoing a hunt standpoint.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. And there's so many different variables that can go wrong. And so many different variables that, you know, will affect your outcome of your film. And it is exactly like you're talking about as a hunt, you know, as far as just a good learning curve, a good, practice being in a stressful environment and having to cope with it and just, you know, staying focused. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So are you shooting when you're videoing weddings, are you shooting stills and video, or are you primarily just rolling tape?
I'm just rolling tape. If I had to do photos, I would have another one or two people there just to do that. And that'd be a totally separate thing. And they'd have to pay quite a bit more for that.
Yeah, because I give you the unpleasant task of doing both when when we're on the mountain there, kind of, you know, in between video clips, they're trying to shoot some still stuff as well. So that kind of gives you double duty when we're on the mountain.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because, like, I can have the record button on and think, man, that is a badass still photo. And then I just watch you walk through the screen and think, oh, well, there it went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. On those, you just can't kind of, you know, catch them both there. No,
I mean, I could click the photo button, but then I'll lose a frame in my video. So it'll look janky if I, you know, in post, but
yeah. Yeah. So Cody, for guys that are interested, or not Cody, I'm sorry, Wes, for guys that are interested in, you know, kind of going down this road that you're doing now, where I imagine you're starting to film more than just what you're doing for me and starting to, you know, pick up some freelance work. What kind of give us some thoughts on, you know, starting out, you kind of laid out how you started out as a beginner, but maybe if you were to do things differently, what you would do. And then also maybe just some thoughts on, is it something that you regret doing in that you're sacrificing, you know, hunting season to be out there in the woods filming? Is it something that you're, you know, happy that you took this, began this walk, or is it, you know, you have some regrets there?
Yeah. So the first thing I got to say is, if you're thinking about picking up a camera and you want to be a videographer, or you want your own media company or whatever the deal is you have to know what your end goal is. When I started this, I was kind of enamored with popularity, notoriety, whatever you'd like to call it. I'd like to think that I'm older and wiser now, and really my only goal for me to have a camera in my hand is, number one, I just want to be in the woods more, bottom line. And I, you know, I want to either, number one, get paid to do it, or just really being enjoying it. And so, you know, when I think about me carrying a camera now, yes, it is taking up some of my hunting season, and a lot of people, that is what they struggle with. Well, you know, I can't put my camera, you know, I don't have my bow in my hand if I'm carrying my camera. Well, that's true. But with me, I look at it as I'm able to go on hunts that are either before my season would start or after my season would start. And I just get to be, you know, I just get to be in the mountains more, and I'm, you know, getting paid to be there. And that's, you know, that's what I want. So, that's pretty much what I feel like. When you start something, you have to figure out how exactly you want to do it and what you want out of it. You know, and I'd say, as far as starting something like that, like I've done, you know, I went on a pretty unique route to get where I'm at. But I would like to say that when I was starting it, social media was not as popular as it was now. Even though it was only 4 years ago or 3 years ago, whatever it was still growing. And there's so many different platforms now to show all of your work. So it's real easy for someone to see it. So, I mean, what I would do is I would do exactly what I did. I'd buy a little GoPro, buy a little tiny Canon Rebel, get familiar with them, learn how to operate them, start putting your stuff on YouTube, just grow gradually. You know, you're not going to pick up, if you've never done it before, you're not going to pick up a Panasonic GH5 or a Canon 5D Mark III and know how to operate it. You know, start small, throw some stuff together, film everything you possibly can. Film your buddy's duck hunts, film your buddy's turkey hunts, follow your buddies around on a bear hunt. Just, you're just going to have to know that you have a camera in your hand. You're hunting with a camera now. It's what you're doing. You know, you don't have a shotgun, you don't have a rifle, you don't have a bow anymore. You're trading those in, because if that's what you want to do, it's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah, even to expand on that, I mean, there's you know, film your kids' little league game if you have kids, or you know, even take it outside the hunting realm, talking about filming weddings and stuff. That might be a little more pressure than you'd want to put on yourself, you know, in the very beginning there. But you know, there's all kinds of opportunities to gain experience without necessarily having to follow someone in the field.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's other things you can do too. I mean, you could go to your, you know, local, maybe community college and take some photography and then basic videography classes. I know some people that are doing that right now. I haven't done that personally. I've just found all the knowledge that I could ever possibly learn on YouTube. So, I mean, it's funny for people always ask me, you know, where'd you learn to do this? I just go, YouTube. And they kind of look at me funny, and I'm like, well, I mean, serious, you know, you can learn how to do a lot of stuff off the internet. Good.
Is there a certain person that or a YouTube account that you found to be more helpful than others, or several of them that you found to be more helpful than others?
No, I haven't. To be honest, I'll click on a video, and if the person sounds really annoying, I won't listen to it. Pretty much what it comes down to.
All right. good screening method there.
That, I mean, just to kind of add, I think West absolutely nailed it on the head there on several accounts, but a lot of people are always worried about the gear, you know, is their camera good enough? And it doesn't matter if you save and save and save and buy a badass camera and don't have any experience behind it, it's not going to do you any good. And so don't ever let the camera or fear of quality of the camera stop from press and record. And, you know, just start go out there and documenting. And, you know, and I've seen Wes progress just on, you know, on sitting back and watching this whole, his whole career unfold and how things have happened. The progression, like you said, from that first nightmare of a spring bear trip where, you know, that was his crash course and we spent majority of the time in a tent if we weren't hiking in the fog, and rain and snow and all that. You know, his progression, and like he said, he's just got that do it attitude, and he'll make the best out of whatever comes his way. And I think that embracing that as an outdoor filmmaker is key, because if you try to think that, you know, I gotta have this before I can do that, you're never gonna start. And you know, the biggest thing I think is just get out there and start doing it, and quality, you know, and you'll learn throughout just making mistakes and anything else. There's no different than when Born and Raised started in 2007. Literally opening day was the first time any one of us had ever hit a record on camera. So
that's brilliant.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was the Canon GL2. I'm sure you remember those, South.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it was purchased with Trevor's, he was going to dental school at the time, and it was purchased with his student loan money. That's how it all began.
Responsible there. Yeah. I love that story. I mean, that just is like the epitome of winging it right there.
Oh, it's bad. Yep.
Well, good deal. So Wes, kind of wrapping this part of the podcast up, kind of what are your aspirations as a videographer, filmmaker, kind of moving forward? I know you're starting to kind of gain some recognition within the hunting industry as far as, you know, guys that are looking to hire a cameraman. You're starting to get some looks and get some more work. What are you kind of wanting to do from here, especially as, you know, with a recent wedding or marriage yourself, and then in fact that excluded you from the Nevada hunt in 2016, was you got married there, and then now your first kid kind of on the way. How do you kind of, you know, see you know, growing a family, working or maybe not working, with continuing on your filming career?
Yeah, so I got married 10 months ago, or I got married, yes, 10 months ago. And I got, and then 9 months after that, or Wow, I'm screwing my timeline up here. I got married in August, and now I have a baby due in June. So you can put two and two together. It didn't take us very long. But basically, you know, I hope to be filming more, more hunts outside of the August, September, October area. So, you know, basically I'm looking for people who are doing hunts in December, maybe even, or they're doing spring hunts. That's pretty much what I'm looking for. I don't think that I want to take on very much more as far as time away from home, just because number one, going on two trips with you south for 10 days, you know, in a 30-day stretch, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And just from being just yourself physically standpoint, that's a pretty tough thing to do. But yeah, no, there's a lot of work out there, and I've been putting some feelers out there, and there's definitely work to be done. It's just a matter of, you know, who do you want to film, to be honest? Like, who do you want to film? Yeah, I mean, there's not much. I guess I don't really, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't have it all figured out.
Well, there's certainly nothing wrong with winging it, because it seems to have been successful for you thus far. Figure it out kind of day by day. And honestly, you know, until you have had a kid in your life and kind of experience that, you have really no idea how that's going to impact you, and then how, you know, your wife's going to handle it and how you're going to handle it, and then together as a family and figure out that kind of that whole equation there. There's a lot, you know, that you'll kind of go through from a learning standpoint as a parent in the next year, over the next year, as I'm sure you could vouch with there, Cody.
No, absolutely. That's, I mean, as I'm getting ready to go on this trip here for Spring Bear, you know, my wife is also pregnant, due in July. So it's, you know,
boom.
Yeah, it number two, and my daughter's already 2 years old. She'll be two in July, and it's just pure chaos. It's like, I thought life was busy before, and you know, it's, but with that said, I would not change that one bit. I mean, it's definitely a blessing being a father. It's pretty awesome. And I mean, being in Wes's stage in life and, you know, expecting her first, you know, I had a lot of people talk about, you know, the instant love and all this, and you cannot put it into words what really he's going to experience coming up. I mean, so super stoked for you guys.
Yeah, we're super stoked. I mean, as far as me being gone and stuff, like you were talking about south, I've pretty much got the chillest wife that I could have even asked for as far as me being gone. Good deal. Yeah. I mean, with that comes a lot of discretion and me trying to make sure that I'm home enough, you know, just not to be an absolute jack wagon, because I could, and, you know, I doubt she'll listen to this, but bless her heart, she wants me to pursue the stuff that's going to make me happy, and I love her for it. It's awesome. So
there's a good bit of advice right there for, you know, some of the younger crowd that may not have gotten hitched up yet, is, you know, if you are very passionate about the outdoors, is make sure that, you know, is well spelled out and understood by your future significant other. You know, if you don't want a lot of friction in your marriage, moving forward, because I've, you know, my first wife was not, let's just say that conversation didn't really happen. And my assumptions were, you know, that things were going to go like as well as what is happening with Wes, were not realized. So yeah, definitely winging it on that one didn't pay off for me.
Yeah, no, I didn't wing that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, Wes, let's transition. You had a bear hunt that went wrong earlier last month, and I'd like to kind of get you to retell that adventure and share that one with us. I've had some setbacks in my life over the years as well, and this sounded like it was one for you. I'm not going to give away too much more, but you seem like you're in good spirits now, but I'd love to hear the story. And for the record, I've gotten little tiny teaser tidbits, but I really don't know kind of what happened. So let's kind of lay it out. You went on a spring bear float trip, and why don't you kind of pick up from there?
Yeah. So to preface this story, I love the bear hunt. Along with all the other hunting that I do, but I just really love bear hunting. I think when I had early success in my younger years, and it just stuck with me ever since. And I've just been addicted to it. But the story actually starts last year. Before I go into this, the people in this story are going to remain anonymous. Sometimes, we all let our lives live out on social media so people can know, what's going on in our life. But, some people don't exactly want to be in the spotlight or anything like that. So I'm going to keep those people anonymous. So last year, a buddy and I went on a float trip as well. The same float trip that I went on this year. And so last year, we got my drift boat ready. We did research on the river, figured out where we wanted to float, what takeout we wanted to take out, how we were going to do the shuttle, all that jazz, et cetera, et cetera. So last year was a definite learning curve. Within the first 2 hours, we hit many, many rocks. Not because we weren't paying attention, but just because we hadn't floated on a river like that before. And it was moving pretty good. All these rocks are just right below the water, so you can't see them. So the person in the front of the boat had to literally stand in the front and look down and say, left, 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 right, right, right. So we're dodging rocks down the entire river. We lost our anchor. We didn't take a net to fish with because we didn't know if there was even going to be any fish in the river. Turns out there was an absolute ton of fish, and we lost a very, very big, I don't know if it was a steelhead or a trout or what it was, on the side of the boat. It was just kind of a wreck, to be honest, but it was fun. Nothing bad happened. We learned, and, we felt like getting off the river that if we had to literally go put the boat back in right away and float it again, that it would be smooth sailing. And we were veterans. And we ended up seeing 14 bears in 3-4 days, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. That's good hunting.
Yeah. And I missed a bear at, I shoot a little bit long range. I missed a bear at 680. I shot maybe an inch or two over its back.
That's a long shot with a bow.
Yeah. You didn't know I had a 680 pin, did you?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
that bear was a blonde bear. I have the video. That bear was a blonde bear. It was probably as blonde as an elk in this.
Oh, wow. What a heartbreaker there.
And then I end up missing another bear at 100 yards due to a scope malfunction. I missed that bear, and I thought, okay, 680, yeah, maybe a little bit of movement in my scope. 100 yards, no way. I watched the bear walk away, and I was like, dude, something's wrong with my gun. And I sat there, and I ranged something at 100 yards, and I shot 5.5 feet over.
Over Holy smokes.
That. I must have bumped my Lapua's scope or the scope of my Lapua or something. I don't know what happened. But anyways, we didn't shoot a bear. So my friend's buddy drew it this year, who I can now call him a friend myself. But so he drew a tag. And so three of us were going on the trip this year. Same thing's going to happen. We didn't go opening weekend. Well, yeah, we did. We went opening weekend. So there's three of us in the boat this year. And funny thing, we get to where we're going to drop our boat off for the shuttle service, because we got to have someone take our pickup down the 40 miles down the river, you know, for us to hook back up at the end of our trip. And this guy at the shuttle service, he goes, oh yeah, is that a fiberglass boat? And I'm like, yeah, it's a blue fibercraft. That's a Clackercraft. And he goes, oh yeah, yeah, I pulled a boat just like that out of the river 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it was kind of odd. And my buddies and I are thinking, like, why is this guy saying this to us? He's like, yeah. And he goes out to the truck and he's looking at the boat. He goes, yep, this is almost the exact same boat that I pulled out of this river 3 weeks ago. And it was just kind of something that was stuck in the back of our heads for a minute. And we all just kind of thought it was strange. So
when he says pulled out, does he mean like the?
He means that the boat, someone wrecked the boat and he pulled, mm-hmm. had to pull it out of the river.
Okay. Okay. Versus just a normal yes. portage or whatever. Not portage, but taking the boat out. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we get to the launch. We're all hopping in. Last year, I forgot to put the plug in the boat.
That would be my maneuver right there.
yeah. So last year I forgot to put the plug in the boat. So I go, hey guys, we need to put the plug in the boat. So we put the plug in the boat and everything was good. Actually, last year I left my Lapua on the side of the boat launch because I set my gun down to hop in the boat and didn't grab the boat. We started floating down the river and we had to stop the boat and go back, get my gun. Anyway,
oh boy.
Yeah. Flying by the seat of our pants again. But, so anyways, this year started off, you know, like a normal, you would hope a trip would start off. So we get the boat in the water there. All three of us jump in and start floating down the river. And there's three sections of the river that are classed with rapids, just one, two, three little chutes that are like, Cody, what's the smallest class?
Class two, basically, is like in the rafting terms, class two. I don't even know if they really do anything as a class one, but two, three, and then four, five, six. Six is unrunnable, basically.
Okay, so basically a two. So there's three little runs in the river that are class two. So just enough to make you pucker a little bit. So we float through the first one. It was fine. We float through the second one. You know, it was fine too. And I said something. I'm on the sticks. And so I said something after we passed the second one and we hadn't had any trouble so far. And I said, I yelled, "That's right, river. You can take it up the blank."
Okay, let me hit the pause button right here, because there is a story that you have to go look up. It's Patrick McManus. Have you ever read any Patrick McManus?
They shoot holes in shooting, canoe, right?
Yes. There's a story called Shooting the Chicken Out Narrows that you have to read, man. I mean, this is laying out exactly like his story in that book so far. I mean, this is like you couldn't script this any closer to the story that he wrote. It is hilarious. I mean, I was almost wetting myself laughing so hard I couldn't breathe reading the story. But anyway, go ahead and pick it up.
Yeah, so I just yell, well, actually I yell the name of the river, and I'm not going to say it on here. I don't want to blow out my hunting spots, but I go, "That's right, river, you can take it up the blank. And my buddies, you know, they laugh and they think, okay, whatever, Wes. And so last year, the spot where we lost the anchor on, there's a really big rock sitting in the middle of a river. When I say there's a really big rock, I mean it's about 25 feet wide and sticks up in the air 25 feet. So it's a big rock. It's more like the size of a small house. And last year we had gone to the left, the left side of the rock. And what happened was, is the swells are so deep right there, the back end of the boat dropped like tremendously. And even though I had the anchor all the way up, it hooked on a rock and pulled the anchor right out of all of my cables and everything. And I reached for the rope. In hindsight, 2020, you'd never reach for the rope. It's a great way to get your hand burnt. So,
or jerked out of your wrap, yeah, out of your boat.
Yeah, it's true. Or have your shoulder socket ripped out or something. So I had read online that you were supposed to go to the right side of this big rock. And I'm thinking, I was like, well, that would make sense, because last year it was, you know, we lost the anchor on the left side. So we had gone there fully knowing that we wanted to go to the right side of this rock. We read online, people are like, yeah, you need to go to the right side of it, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, well, like, that's what we're going to do. Everyone's telling us that this is what we need to do.
Is still day one. Is that right?
This is 2 hours into our float.
Okay.
2 hours into our float. So my two buddies, I'm rowing. And then my two buddies are in front of me, and they actually have an oar themselves. So if they last second see a rock, they can try to jab it and move us out of the way. They were there for spare oars in case I broke one, because last year was a cluster. So this rock comes up and I'm like, okay, guys, how's it looking? And they go, yeah, the left looks pretty bad. And we were like, yeah, we definitely want to go to the right. And I stand up, I look, and I go, yeah, it does look pretty bad over there. Let's try to go to the right. Okay, we're going to the right. So right before this rock, on the right-hand side of the river, there's a bank, and it kind of jets out, like protruding towards the rock in the middle. So I have to actually maneuver my boat around this jet of land, this little outcropping, and then I have to turn my boat to the left and then sharply turn to the right real quick to go to the right side of this rock. So what I don't know is that there's actually no current that's actually going to the right around the rock. There's current that's pulling to the left, and there's current that's just blowing straight into the rock and then falling to the right. So I get around the land and I'm trying to go to the right side. I'm trying to row to the right of this rock. And all of a sudden I just lose all my power. There's nothing for me to row against. There's nothing. And I'm thinking, what the heck? And all of a sudden, you know, the water speed is increasing. And I yell to the front, and I was like, hey, hit the rock with your oar. And so my buddy, now we are sideways and we are headed towards the rock. And this is only like 20 yards here from when I came around the land. And he's within touching distance of the rock now. And he kind of pushes us with his oar, standing in the boat, away from the rock just momentarily. And I thought, oh, that did it. Like, oh, like the boat started to straighten out. And I thought, oh, sweet. Like, we're going to bounce off of this. And so we were just going to like hit the rock with the rail, the side of the boat. And we're just going to, you know, kind of go down the right pass here. But what happens that there's so much force is it pushes the boat up against the rock. So it pushes the boat sideways, floating down the river, up against the rock, and the water starts coming in from the river side. So now the boat is kind of, the bottom of the boat is actually starting to go up the rock, and water is coming over the side and pushing it down.
Right.
So we all get real wet real quick. My buddy on the right, he gets pulled out of the boat and shot down through some rapids. And then my buddy that was on the left side of the boat in the front, he gets pulled down and shot through some rapids as well. I get pulled out of the boat, below the boat, and somehow hang up. So all three of us, actually, just two of us were wearing waders. So two of us were wearing waders, and no one was wearing life jackets. You know, you go on a trip and you think, oh, we need three life jackets because it's the law. We have to have a throwable and, you know, flotation device for every single person. So that's what we did. You know, we have three life jackets and, you know, we're sitting on them because they're comfortable type deal. And so, you know, in this accident, the things that were there to save our lives potentially aren't doing anything. So I get sucked under the boat, and I say sucked under, it was, there's like a lot of pressure with all that, with all the current, like, you don't, like, I've been lifeguard certified, and, you know, you hear about all these, like, you know, what it feels like with the currents and stuff, and it kind of doesn't really hit you. But when you're in the situation, you will know what I'm talking about. So I get pulled under the boat.
So by now the boat's capsized.
So by now the boat is capsized. It's called bathtubbed. The boat is bathtubbed on the rock. So, the bottom of the boat is sitting on the rock and it's open towards the river, and the river is hitting the boat against the rock. So it's called the water's bathtubbing it against the rock.
Okay. So it's basically holding it there with the sheer force of the current.
Oh yeah.
Filled to the gunwale.
Yep. Yep. So I am now underwater and underneath the boat, and the water is trying to move me, but I'm stuck because my waders are stuck on something at the rock. And miraculously I pop out. And when I buy waders, I usually buy waders, at least two or three sizes too big for me. Thinking in the case of if I'm ever in that situation, that it'll be easy for me to pop out. And I think that's something that probably could have saved my life right there. So I popped out of my waders, and I start to be thrown around to the right side of the rock and to go through a little rapid. So I hit, there's these rapids coming up. And there's a down log basically like in front or in the middle of these rapids. And I,
so what's going through your head right now as you're experiencing this?
Honestly, all I'm doing is I'm moving my body as hard and as fast as I can. Cause I'm in Carhartt jeans. I'm in a sweatshirt. I'm just literally trying to get a breath of air, and it hasn't been very long, me being underwater, but it's pretty freaky. And I'm just like, I just need to get a breath. Like when it sucked me in, I didn't get a chance to go, you know, it's just, it's got me. And so, you know, I've got the half breath or whatever that I had.
So you shucked your waders off underwater. Is that right?
Somehow. Yep. I think the force of the current trying to pull me down the current is pretty much what ultimately saved me. Pulled me out of my waders really easily. So I get pulled out of my waders, and now I'm going to go through these rapids, and this log that's in front or in the middle right there somewhere, I hit this log in the middle of my body. So there's a current, and I'm stuck on this log in the middle of my body, basically like my knees, my feet go out in front of me and my head goes down like I'm doing a crunch or something. And I got this log across my stomach and I'm pinned against it because there's so much force pushing downstream that I'm stuck on a log.
Is your head above water at this point or under?
I'm under. And so I'm literally like, I can't get up, and the water is pushing me. So I can't get off this log. And so like in just a split second, I'm just like kind of lean forward and the water spits me over the top of the log. And I start doing somersaults down the rapids. And eventually I just flail my arms and legs enough that I pop up out of the water and catch a breath and reach my arms out and grab a rock on the side of the side of the bank there and stop floating downstream. So that happens. And first thing I do is like, as soon as I catch my breath, I kind of look and see where my buddies are. And I saw one buddy who had started to like run downstream, and another buddy that was kind of standing there near me. And, I was just worried that they died. Like, that was just my thinking. Like, as soon as I got up and I was good, I was super worried that they were dead. And what happened was my buddy who first got pulled in, he popped out the quickest. So he had the least amount of time. Excuse me. He had the least amount of time underwater. And I think he was standing by himself on the side of the river for a second or two or three. And I can imagine in those couple seconds, he was not feeling super great. Not being able to see anybody else. So anyways, we're all three alive and we're on the side of the river.
And so what happened to the second buddy there?
So basically, in order, the first guy that got pulled into the water, he spent the least amount of time and then got out the quickest. And the next buddy, he spent a little bit more time underwater and went down river a little farther. And then I was last and went the farthest down the river.
And had the most kind of harrowing experience. So the other guy that had the waders on, did he end up losing his waders as well? Or was he?
So I believe he made it with his waders on. He had his waders. I'll have to ask him just to clarify. And it was crazy. Very crazy. So as soon as we all realized that, you know, number one, we're all alive, everyone just starts thinking, grab the shit that's floating down the river. It's like a freaking cluster, and there is just stuff going, backpacks, we got coolers, we got Pelican cases, we got guns, you know, grab the stuff. So I actually jump back in the river, and my buddy's like, dude, get out of the river, get out of the river. And I'm like, well, we got to get this stuff. And we did, but he was right in the situation. I shouldn't have jumped back in the river. I should have just ran downstream and tried to catch up with everything. Ran down the bank and tried to catch up with everything. So we all start going down the river, like walking down the side to try to catch up with stuff. And I have like this, like I've got a ton of adrenaline going, but I have like this like wave of emotion hit me. And like, it's not exactly manly to talk about, but like, I just start like tearing up because I felt so responsible for myself, for my dad's boat that I just wrecked, for my two buddies' lives, you know? And I was just like, my gosh, I just almost killed us. Like, this is all me. I can't believe I did that. Like, you know, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't consider myself reckless, but I feel like that was really reckless. And it just like scared me. So my buddy, he's just like, Wes, like snap out of it. Like, it's fine. It's okay. We're alive. Let's just go. And so, you know, I quick snap out of it. And we start running down the freaking side of the river. And sure enough, we get a bunch of stuff out. So what happened was, is we all three got our backpacks and we covered all of our backpacks in garbage sacks because it was kind of like rainy, misty that earlier that day. And so we didn't want our backpacks to get wet. And so when we pulled our backpacks out, we expected for our backpacks to just be totally soaked because, I mean, a garbage sack isn't exactly the most...
It's not a dry bag.
No, not even remotely. So we all get our backpacks out. And to our surprise, our backpacks are pretty much completely dry. And so we can all change into dry clothes. So
at this point, are you grab your packs? Are you diving into your packs right now? Are you still running, trying to retrieve floating gear, or is it pretty much gone down the river at this point?
So we're grabbing gear and throwing it against the bank and running down and grabbing more gear and throwing it against the bank so that we kind of just have like a hobo effect on the side of the river here with gear spread everywhere. What happened was we've lost our Pelican case. Our Pelican case, which is our camera case, it's a waterproof floating camera case. And it's got all of our camera gear, all of our personal camera gear that we own, as well as rental gear. We talking couple L series lenses. We rented a Canon body as well. My Canon body, our L series lens, audio equipment, 20 batteries. I mean, I could look at the list that I wrote for the insurance stuff, but you guys can probably get the picture. Like all of our expensive stuff in one tan Pelican case floating down the river. And there was no catching that sucker. It just literally floated out of our lives. So
like, putting a dollar value on that, what are you talking?
Probably $15,000.
Oh man.
Probably when you add everything up. So that's just floating away, and I just get like, I'm so pissed that thing floated away. So that floats away. So we're like, well, that's okay. Like, we'll be all right. And a cooler floated away with a bunch of gear in it. So we're on the side of the river and we're just like, well, frick. You know, that really sucked. So basically, you know, we get everything that we can. You know, onto our backs, we change out of our wet clothes, put our wet clothes on our backpacks, and we start hiking out of there.
Now the boat still pinned to the rock.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This boat. I mean, let me tell you, this boat is stuck. This boat is not moving at all. You know, we actually, I had like some fishing line and a fish hook, and we tied it to a tree branch, and we got the rope to the front of the boat, you know, because it was in the water. And so we fished it out, and we're like, well, maybe we can pull this thing out and we can keep hunting. That was our mentality. So all three of us are pulling on this boat for maybe 10 minutes, and we're convincing ourselves that the boat is moving. And that sucker did not move an inch. Maybe the only reason it moved an inch is because the water was moving it an inch. So that we were like, yeah, that thing stuck. So it stays there. So we leave the boat there and we start hiking out. But I didn't have any boots with me because mine floated down the river because I was in my waders. But I did, thanks to Cody, have a pair of Crocs with me.
Real quick, before you go further, I want to let people know what you're talking about, the dangers of hypo, like you pretty much underplayed what you guys went through in the fact that it's April 15th in Oregon. It's, I don't know, air temperature wise, water temps hovering.
It was 19 at night.
Okay, 19 degrees at night. So air temp, water temps 38 to 40 degrees max, probably 40 degrees, I would imagine. So just to let people kind of realize what, like, hypothermia is, I just don't understand how none of you guys got in worst
invitation
case.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, is while none of us felt cold until after we're done trying to pull the boat out. And then all of a sudden, all three of us are like kind of doing the head bob and like, wow, this is like really cold. Actually, we need to like get out of our clothes. And so we're like standing there and like fidgeting with our backpacks, trying to get our backpacks open because our hands are like not working. And, you know, everything ends up fine. We all stripped down to our skivvies and put dry clothing on. And that was a blessing. It was a miracle that our bags were dry too. So, yeah, it was. Yeah.
So at this point, how far are you from your exit point, or your exit point, your entrance point? And then are you having to hike back up river to where you dropped in, or are you able to go overland, or what's the scenario?
So if we would have gone another 2 miles or mile, we would have to have about 1500 feet elevation gain and drop, and go like across a creek and across a bunch of stuff. But we, this whole ordeal happened only about at the very most, like, I don't know exactly. I haven't looked how far it is, but at the very most, 2.5 miles from where we put in. So we only have a two and a half mile walk. I don't even know if it was that far. 2 mile, 2.5 mile walk to where we put the boat in at. If we walked the other way, it'd be like 30 some miles. So it was very evident that we were going to go back, you know, the way we came. So I duct taped the bottom. I put a bunch of moleskin and electrical tape and duct tape on the bottom of my foot. And then I shoved my foot into the bottom, into my Crocs. And I kind of like tape my Crocs to my ankle so that I can walk in these suckers, because I've got, you know, my fully loaded pack and then all the random other crap that we picked up and threw on our backpacks. And so I, you know, I think my other buddy hiked out in, did he hike out in his waders? No, he didn't. He packed them. But I huffed it out of there in my Crocs, and it really sucked.
So is there any other boat traffic on the river at this point or time of year?
Yeah. So some fishermen put in before we did, as well as some Oregon State police officers put in before us and floated past before we got there, though. So what happens is we hike out and we get to where we get to the little lodge there that we, you know, did the shuttle from. And my buddy, we see this guy that's talking about this boat that he pulled out of the river. And the guy goes, "What happened?" And my buddy, without a beat, he just goes, "We lost the freaking boat. You jinxed us." And then the guy's like, "Are you serious?" And we're like, "How serious do we look, bro? Like, yeah, we're pretty serious. Like, I'm in Crocs." And I just, yeah, it was, we weren't super happy. But, you know, actually, one thing I will say was, after it all, if there was two guys that I had to do that with, I would choose those two guys, because in all honesty, if it could, it, you know, one, another person that doesn't have the same mentality that we do is there, they have a mental breakdown on the side of the river, they get real pissed off or something happens and it ends up in fisticuffs right there on the side of the river, or later on the way home or something. So I have to give all the credit in the world for, you know, to those guys, you know, to, well, for all of us, you know, for me being able to keep our heads, you know, stay friends, not point fingers, you know, and I felt like I had all the blame, all the, you know, responsibility to be put on, but, you know, they were all, they said, you know, it's not your fault. We were all there. We were all in agreement saying, let's go to the right, go to the right. You know, we weren't dorking around and we weren't drinking beer, floating down the river and having a good old time. You know, we were being vigilant. We were, you know, we thought we had done all of our research. You know, we weren't being stupid. You know, the thing that we don't want is to be like the guys from the west. Oh yeah. The guys from the west side of the state came over here and they thought they were going to be, you know, something cool and they wrecked their boat. You know, we didn't want that like stereotype to be on us because, you know, that's not what happened. You know, we all still feel like, you know, obviously we should have gone to the left side of the rock, and that's what the people I've talked to that have floated it, that's what they've all said. They said, yeah, you don't go to the right, which, you know, we had no previous knowledge to that. So, I mean, it, you know, hindsight 2020, we should have just gone to the left. And if we would have gone to the left, I would be telling you the story right now.
Well, interesting that there's such contrary information that you're finding online after, you know, researching it further, you know, following your trip from last year.
Yeah, you know, I think the main problem was is I think those are kayakers. I think that those are kayakers that don't care. I think they're kayakers that are doing it in August and July and don't care if they get a little wet. I don't think there's very many people. Actually, I know there's no one in a drift boat doing that, going to the right side of that rock.
And here I am about to embark on the same float in my drift boat on Monday.
You're going to send me a picture of that rock and say, what were you thinking?
Serious pucker factor on your part, I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've grown up in a drift boat and I've rode a lot of stuff. And I mean, it's not a matter of if you're going to sink a boat, it's a matter of when. I mean, it's one of, if you do it enough, things happen, mistakes are made. And, I mean, the best thing about it is Wesley sitting here telling us this story. I mean, that's on the hindsight of it.
No doubt.
What you guys encountered was just, pretty insane. But yeah, to say the least, that my, hackles arise a little bit. You know, I just thought, oh, you know, it's just, I'm used to fishing here or on the Umpqua or being in some pretty good white water, but never really too concerned about it. And now going on a river that I've never seen, like, yeah, it definitely makes a guy, reconsider what he's thinking. So
makes it real.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Wow, man. Oh man, Wes, that's quite a story. I got a healthy respect for, you know, the water. I almost drowned in the ocean when I was in seventh grade or something. And ever since then, it's, I feel like, you know, you're completely out of your element when you're in the water. I'm certainly no seal or, or anything close to that. And that, I mean, a float trip adventure, you talk about, or you hear about all the, like a moose float trip up in Alaska seems like the ultimate kind of adventure. And I've been, I've capsized a raft in Alaska floating out a couple of moose. And I think when we had Lon Lauber way back early on in our podcasting, we talked about that story We capsized it in super mild water with a, you know, raft that we had loaded, you know, double the weight capacity. So we were just asking for it. But we were fortunate in that it happened actually. And then Lon got jerked out, raft a few days later. You're gonna have to listen to that podcast again. You know, if the listener hasn't heard it before, go back early on. It's Lawn Lobbers podcast, but it was funnier than heck. But we didn't have any, you know, strong current. I mean, literally when we flipped the raft over, we just stood up. You know, we had all of our gear went in the drink just like you. And you know, we had 900 pounds of moose meat that went in the river. But everything was just, you know, pluck it out. It was just, you know, where it kind of tailed out into a pool. And, so not, you know, no fear of drowning or anything like that. That is some serious pucker factor there. Makes you kind of rethink things, especially, you know, with the kid on the way and all that. I mean, it's a lot of things flash before your eyes.
Oh man, you're not kidding. Yep, you're absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm super thankful to still be here complaining about losing my camera gear.
So did you ever, I know that the one thing that you had said is that the insurance company was jerking you around. Did you ever get any resolution on that?
No. So none of my stuff, I mean, basically none of my stuff is going to be covered, which I mean, it is what it is. I'm not exactly like upset or pissed off anymore about it. I'm kind of just like, well, this is what's going to happen and I'm going to just roll with it. So, I mean, it was just like, it was eating on me pretty good, but, you know, it's kind of just like, well, you can sit here and wallow and be pissed off about it for a while, or you can just rebound and, you know, do what you got to do and work harder, you know, and get the stuff back. So that's what I'm going to do, you know, kind of starting from scratch again, which sucks. I mean,
So, what type, just for a learning opportunity for, you know, you go into the school of hard knocks and other people having the benefit of being able to learn from it, there are, you know, specific insurances that you can buy, you know, business insurance for, you know, it'll cover your camera gear. Is that the type of insurance you had, or what type of policy did you have? And then going forward, what type of policy are you looking at?
So I had just renter's insurance, and and to my belief, it was supposed to cover all of your personal items. So mm-hmm. If you own something, so like, let's say you have a bow in your truck.
So this is like a homeowner's policy,
there's a homeowner's policy. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have your bow and arrow in the back of your truck. Someone breaks the window, steals the bow out of your truck. It's your homeowner's insurance that pays for it, not your auto insurance. People kind of get that jacked around a little bit. That is your renter's or home insurance. You know, so if someone breaks into your house, steals all your stuff, same type of thing. Or if something happens, your oven blows up and ruins a bunch of stuff, your homeowner's renter's pays for that. It's anything that involves your personal mm-hmm. property.
So what was their reasoning behind not covering you?
That it was damaged by water.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. And so I still don't get it.
Have you talked to an attorney?
I haven't. And, you know, my dad was like pretty like, dude, you know, you should talk to an attorney, this, that, and the other. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want the stress and headache of it, to be honest. I don't know. It's an option, but I've just kind of let it go, to be honest. It doesn't sound super logical. Some, you know, you might be thinking, you know, Wes, you should fight it and this and that and the other, which
Well, in the event that any of our listeners are an attorney and could shed any insight onto this, whether, you know, Wes should go down that road, shoot us an email and let us know, or hit us or you up on social media. And because I would hate to see, you know, because insurance companies are going to do whatever they can to not pay. I mean, that's pretty much a default in my experience, is that they're going to come up with any, you know, reason that they can to not pay. And then because they got nothing to lose, you know, if they tell you no, and unless you push it, then they're not going to have to pay out. But if they're, that's something that's legitimate, then, you know, if somebody knows better than me, Cody, or Wes, then please give us some feedback there. Because, man, dude, that's a crippling blow to lose all of your. I mean, in 2005, August 1st, I had a hunt planned, you know, August 8th, heading to Nevada, and my cabinet shop burnt to the ground, and I had 13 employees and lost, you know, $250,000 in that fire. And and my secretary had not paid my insurance bill. And so it was 100% out of pocket. And so I can certainly empathize with you in this position that you're in, you know, where you lose your livelihood, your ability to make money. And it was a long road for me to get back on my feet again and up and going. And you certainly have the right attitude and mentality the way you're taking it right now. But it, you know, it would be a hell of a lot easier if you had 15 grand in your bank account that you could go and buy new, you know, camera gear and, you know, no debt from having to buy, you know, pay for that rental equipment. So, you know, like I said, if there's somebody who knows, you know, more than we do on that and can shed some light on that one, that would be much appreciated.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. And I mean, my insurance agent has actually done, you know, a lot of work trying to help me push it through. You know, I don't have any complaints with him at all. It's the claims department and the, you know, the whole, well, corporate this and that. Mm-hmm. That's where the problem is, to be honest. You know, it's a shitty situation that I'm kind of glad that I'm here to deal with. So.
Yeah, no, you got to keep it, you know, like you said, look on the bright side, because it certainly could have been the least of your wife's problems.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're 100% on that. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, the whole thing. I'm just glad that you're here talking to us, Wesley.
Yeah, I am too. Me too. I'm really glad. Cody, so you are hunting that by the river?
Yep. Yeah, we're just, and for me, it's not so much on the bear hunt itself, but the adventure, you know. And I'm, you know, we've talked about this in the past and on this show, and I'm an experience-based guy versus, you know, overall punching a tag. And I just feel like this is the poor man's float trip, you know, going to Alaska in the wild version. So don't get that many opportunities. So Trent and I were talking about it, and we're gonna do basically a 5-day semi-live series, so when we get back, we'll be posting it up on the YouTube channel as quick as we can get it edited and just kind of show everyone the adventure. So that's the plan and the goal, and hopefully I can put a stock on one. And I'm not a rifle guy. I haven't had a rifle in my hands, I guess, once in 2010 on a California blacktail hunt that I didn't fill my archery tag. Other than that, I haven't really touched a rifle. So, I'm borrowing a rifle as bad as that sounds from my dad. And, if I can't get close on one, with the compound, I'm going to, shoot it with the boomer, I guess. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the funny thing is I love that float. That's such a cool float. It's pretty sweet. But the reason why I wanted to start floating that is because the roads are all so full of snow that you can't ever get up to where you want to hunt. I mean, it'd be a pointless walk up a road for bear. I mean, just being honest, it's way too snowed out. So that's the whole reason why I wanted to do the whole boat thing. And then after we wrecked my boat, I get there to the lodge, and this guy is saying, yeah, they cleared the road from this town to this town. You can go all the way up and over. And I go, what? He's like, yeah, it's all clear. You can drive all the way through. And I go, well, if I would have known that, I wouldn't have even brought my boat over here, or I wouldn't have even put the boat in the water. I would have just driven up there and hunted from the top. I was kicking myself for not even asking that question before we put the boat in.
Yeah, like Cody said, you would have not obviously, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you would have driven up there and avoided losing your camera gear. But man, you talk about an adventure floating a river. I mean, that is just brings the hunt to a whole new level of epicness.
Oh yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It is epic. It is fun. It is all of those things for sure.
I'm just stoked to stay the night in a sleeping bag. I don't care where it's at.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, there's way easier ways to shoot mule deer than the way that, you know, we do it when you're filming me, Wes. But it's, you know, the country that you're going into, to me, that makes that, you know, the hunt, you know, memorable, that alpine country, wherever you're at, whatever state you're in. It doesn't have to be the spot that I hunt per se. It's just those mountains and floating a river is a completely unique experience and kind of provides that same sense of adventure.
Absolutely. No, it is. You're absolutely right. And like I said earlier, when we were talking about starting up to do your own filming, you know, what's your goal? You know, my goal is to just spend more nights out there. That's mm-hmm. what I want to do. So, and floating the river has enabled me to do that some. So, yep.
And thanks to some good fortune and guardian angel hanging over you, you still get to keep doing it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Going to be putting some long hours in framing some houses this summer.
Yeah.
But I'll regroup.
Righto.
That's just a true test of Wes's character and what he just said right there, and proud to call you my friend and honored. So I've got a Canon T3i that's sitting in my closet you're welcome to have. So
yeah, I appreciate that. I might have to take you up on that here. We'll see.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had numerous people be. I actually haven't told very many people that story. Just out of, you know, don't want to have the image of the guy that's not paying attention, just being reckless on a river and gets in an accident. But I've had quite a few people that I've told about it be super generous and super willing to help me out get my feet back on solid ground, so to speak, and all this. So I'm appreciative of all the people I got in my life. That's for sure. So that thanks Cody for that. And for you, South, for reaching out to me and, you know, offering to help out where you can.
Sure thing. Yeah. I've got, a limited amount of camera gear, but it certainly, well, we've put it to use in the past and you're more than welcome to use it again, even if it's not, you know, me in front of the camera. So whatever I can do to help out. I mean, it's kind of what, you know, friends do is when another friend is in need is reach out and help out. So, yeah, by all means, man, I'm glad you're here to relive the story and I wouldn't think of you as being reckless in that moment. It's just, a bad run of luck there It happens. Even when you do everything right, sometimes things don't go as we plan.
Yep. You're right. Got to roll with the punches.
Yep. Well, I know both of you guys have things that you're supposed to be doing here in the next few minutes. So we probably better wrap this thing up Any parting words that either of you guys want to throw in there?
I'm good. I'm just excited to unplug here next week and hopefully have some fun stuff to share with everyone when we get back. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to catch up. And I know, you know, between your schedule, Cody, and my schedule and this move that I've got going on, it's been hard to get podcasts out with any sense of regularity, but I'm here in Colorado now, full time living. And when you get back from this trip, it'd be a really fun to catch up and hear about, you know, your and Trent's adventure there on the river and then kind of get this going regular again.
Heck yeah. I am super stoked today. I did want to kind of pass things on. We've been working on a signature series of elk calls with Phelps, and we're going to go meet him and finalize, and we'll have our own diaphragms come this fall. So I'm pretty stoked on that.
So some born and raised?
Yeah, some born and raised, probably maybe one called tagged out in 30 days, something else. So yeah, we're pretty stoked. So
sweet. Yeah, I'm anxious to see those. I'm going to have to get some from you. And, start practicing because it's coming up fast, elk season. I'll have a resident elk tag and a resident mule deer tag in my pocket. Wow, man, what a feeling.
So that means that we're going to actually be hunting some elk this year, South.
You know what? I keep saying, oh, I'm going to shoot an elk this year. I'm going to put some time in. Dude, this time we're going to do it. We're going to put an elk on the ground.
Heck yeah.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I'm not sure if I'm pumped about carrying an elk all the way out of there, though.
We're going to get some. I'm going to have a couple of llamas, man. We're going to have some four-legged, four-wheel drive horsepower to help us out.
So, all right, I'm excited about it now.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, I don't think that there's an area in there that we've hunted that we can't get them to. So
that's true.
We'll get them out with the – maybe involve an extra round trip, but I'm excited. I keep thinking about opportunities last year, you know, that I passed on that I just, you know, you kick yourself all year long on, you know, mistakes that you made or you know, like that. And when you pass up an opportunity, I think it was opening day, there was that bull that was bedded across the canyon, that, you know, that there was that big old herd across the canyon over there in Fantasy Land and our Fantasy Island rather. And that one bull broke, that big one broke off and went down and bedded in that triangular stretch of timber. And we never saw him emerge again. And I should have dove in right then and just hauled butt over there and tried to make us play at him just like I was stalking a mule deer. So that won't happen again.
Sweet. I'm pumped. I'm excited to spot an elk and just go.
Yep.
That's not really your style, is it, Sal?
No, I spot mule deer and go, but I spot elk and where's the mule deer around there?
Gosh, you kill me sometimes.
Oh, I know, dude.
Yeah, that's a nice 340 bull over there. Oh, look, there's a 3-point.
Yep. Let's go chase that buck.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, man.
Well, guys, thanks again for getting on the show. Like Sal said, sorry for the irregularity of shows here that we've been kicking out, but we've got some fun stuff in the works, and always appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to the show. So with that, let's wrap this thing.
All righty. All right, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good week.
Sure thing, Wes. Cody.
Yep, have a good hunt. Let's see a big bear, huh?
Sounds good. I'll do my best.
All righty.
All right, take care.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device as soon as they become available. And while you're on iTunes, please take the time to give us a review. This will help us in the iTunes rankings and will help the podcast grow. Share it with your friends on social media. If you've got a topic that you would like to see covered or a guest that you'd like to hear from on a future episode, email it to South or Cody at info@thewesternbowhunterpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.